Robinhood Radio presents Your Health with osteopathic physician Dr. Kim Tripp, a show presented monthly on Robinhood Radio, discussing the challenges faced and the solutions that are available for keeping vital health and well-being throughout our lives. And now, here's Dr. Tripp.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Your Health with Dr. Kim Tripp, osteopathic physician. This is the health show created to bring you vital information and discussion of all kinds of health problems on your mind and in your life from the unique perspective of traditional osteopathic medicine. So first, let's clarify what osteopathic medicine means, as we always do for new listeners. Osteopathic medicine is practiced by fully licensed physicians in the United States with a DO degree, a Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine degree. Our practice is based on the essential relationship in all living things between structure and function. In other words, the natural interdependence between anatomy and physiology, or between the physics of the body and its chemistry. As osteopathic physicians, we use our comprehensive and precisely detailed knowledge of anatomy and physiology to promote health and healing in our patients. We work gently with our hands to help your body restore optimal function based on optimal structure. Our medical specialty is therefore called osteopathic manual medicine. We receive uniquely in-depth training in anatomy and physiology and their relationship within your body in the context of a full physician's medical training. Only U.S.-trained osteopaths are fully licensed physicians and have all of the current medical pharmacopoeia, nutritional science, and full medical training at our disposal. This means that your individual treatment may include a wide range of approaches, but it will always be founded on our gentle hands-on work. We practice from the unique perspective of first looking for the health in our patients, rather than merely finding illness and disease. Our practice has been especially effective for, but is not limited to, musculoskeletal and other structural issues, as well as chronic headache, gastrointestinal problems, post-concussive syndrome, sleep disturbance, allergies, and many, many other problems. We work together with you, the patient, to help you build health and vitality in your body, mind, and spirit as the solution for your health problems, rather than only treating the disease symptoms. So in the radio show, we tackle health issues from this point of view. What can we do to help you build your health and vitality in order to prevent and heal injuries and disease? And we do that by giving you some basic information about the problem to help you understand what's happening, as well as offer solutions and guidance for helping yourself to heal and stay healthy based on our clinical experience with patients in our practice. Today, we're going to complete our series on the human immune system. We're going to do a bit of review to start, as we always do in series shows, but we can't do a full review or we won't have time for the new material. So before we get started, let me remind you that you can listen to all of the prior Your Health shows online at your convenience, including the 5 earlier immune shows, by going to the Goldman Tripp website, www.goldmantripp.net. Click on the radio show icon, then scroll down and you can click on all the individual shows by topic. There are now nearly 50 shows available. You can also get the most recent podcasts on the Robinhood Radio website itself in the on-demand section. Today, we're going to explore the realm of vaccines and immune health and response, a topic on everybody's mind. But first, let's have a brief review of relevant concepts from the earlier shows to keep us up to speed. The human immune system is a highly complex system of interactive organs, tissues, and specialized cells that serve to protect the entire body from foreign substances and toxins, from invading microbes like bacteria, fungi, and viruses, and from our own cells gone awry by producing the immune response. The immune response is a multi-layered biology that ultimately uses many different normal cells, tissues, organs, and physiological strategies within our own body to clear these problematic substances, invaders, or abnormal cells. Remember that normal immune system development and function rely on one basic biological principle, that is, the ability of that immune system to recognize substances, organisms, and cells that are in or on the body as being either self or other, and then to respond with the appropriate physiological interaction with that substance, organism, or cell. It sounds simple, but in order to function successfully, that simple biological principle must be manifested as a nearly infinite array of sensing and response mechanisms throughout our entire body and our entire life, starting in utero and adapting and evolving through birth, infancy, childhood, adulthood, and old age. Recall that there are two basic systems of immune defensive response, innate and adaptive. The innate system is a kind of rapid first responder with generalized responses to all intruders and abnormal cells, including the basic inflammation response. The adaptive system takes longer to respond as it provides specific antibodies and defenses tailored to the specific intruder. The adaptive system is activated by the innate system. Both systems exist to defend us from potentially damaging organisms like bacteria, viruses, fungi, and worms, collectively called pathogens, referring to their capacity to generate pathology, i.e. disease, as well as harmful foreign materials and toxins. Adaptive immunity is an immunity that occurs after exposure to an antigen. Recall that an antigen is a physical or chemical aspect of a pathogen that stimulates our immune response. The antigen can come from either the pathogen or from a vaccination. This adaptive immunity becomes activated when the innate immune response has not controlled an infection. Without the information from the innate immune system, the adaptive response could not be mounted. The innate immune system contains cells that detect potentially harmful antigens and then inform the adaptive immune response about the presence of these antigens. The adaptive immune system also expresses a memory function that allows for an efficient and dramatic response to reinvasion by a pathogen it has already encountered, a key concept for why vaccines work. Memory is handled by the adaptive immune system with little reliance on cues from the innate response. A memory cell is an antigen-specific B or T cell that does not differentiate into an active attacking cell during the primary immune response, but that can immediately become an active cell upon re-exposure to the same pathogen. During the primary immune response, memory cells do not respond to antigens and do not contribute to host defenses. As the infection is cleared and pathogenic stimuli subside, the effectors are no longer needed and they undergo apoptosis, a kind of spontaneous self-induced death. In contrast, the memory cells persist in the physiological library, ready to come to the defense as needed. Keeping all of that in mind, let's now delve into the material on vaccines and our immune health and response. Firstly, what is a vaccine? A vaccine is a substance that, once absorbed into the human physiology, stimulates a person's immune system to produce immunity to a specific disease without developing a full-blown and potentially debilitating or even terminal infection, thereby protecting that person from that disease upon future exposure. Vaccination is the process of receiving a vaccine. It involves the delivery, usually by injection these days, of antigens derived from known pathogens. For example, the antigen might be a piece of the protein coat of a virus or its spike protein, or killed or inactivated actual virus, or actual genetic material from the virus. More on that later. Immunological memory created via the adaptive immune response is the reason vaccines work. Ideally, the effect of vaccination is to create immunological memory through mild exposure. and thus create resistance to specific pathogens without the individual having to experience a full-blown infection. Interestingly, the words vaccine and vaccination originated from the name for the cowpox virus, Vaccinia. In the late 18th century, while making his rounds, English general practitioner Dr. Edward Jenner made an amazing observation. Dairy workers infected with cowpox, which manifested itself as pustules on the hands and forearms, became immune to smallpox, a different then but related to virus, the cowpox. Many different animal species are susceptible to their own particular pox virus, e.g. smallpox, variola virus, infects humans, cowpox infects cows, etc., etc. At that time, smallpox epidemics regularly attacked the community and many people died from it. Medical lore claims that Jenner first heard of this possibility in the late 1770s from a dairy worker who boasted to him that, "I shall never have the smallpox, or I have had the cowpox. I shall never have an ugly pockmarked face." Jenner then made history in 1796 when he gave a patient what became known as the first Vaccinia vaccine, that is, a vaccine made from the cowpox virus. He took pus from the cowpox lesions on a dairy worker's hands and introduced that fluid into a cut he made in the arm of an 8-year-old boy named James Phipps. 6 weeks later, Jenner exposed the boy to smallpox, but the boy did not develop the smallpox, not then, nor on some 20 subsequent exposures to the smallpox disease. The vaccine concept was thus born, and the medical term vaccine has remained in use ever since. Vaccination is based on the knowledge that exposure to non-infectious antigens derived from known pathogens generates a mild primary, aka initial, immune response. The immune response to vaccination may not be perceived by the vaccinated individual's immune system as frank illness, but it still confers immune memory. So when we are then later exposed to the corresponding pathogen to which we were vaccinated, the immune reaction to the actual infectious agent is similar to a secondary subsequent exposure, as if we had already had a full-blown infection and survived and kept the immune memory of how to defend ourselves against this particular infection. Some vaccines do require what we call booster shots or even second doses, like some of the COVID-19 vaccines, because each reinfection with a given pathogen generates more memory cells and increased resistance to that pathogen, and because some memory cells die along the way through natural attrition, certain vaccine courses involve one or more booster vaccinations to mimic repeat exposures. For instance, tetanus boosters are necessary every 10 years because the memory cells created from the vaccine exposure only live about 10 years. So let's look a bit more closely at how these vaccines work within our immune physiology and some of the related ramifications. There are now numerous types of vaccines with different mechanisms of action that stimulate the immune response, and a range of compounds included in the vaccine materials besides the pathogenic material itself. The types include inactivated vaccines, live attenuated vaccines, messenger RNA vaccines, also called mRNA vaccines, subunit, recombinant, polysaccharide, and conjugate vaccines, toxoid vaccines, and viral vector vaccines. So let's describe these a bit further. Inactivated vaccines use the killed version of the virus or bacteria that causes a disease. Inactivated vaccines usually don't provide immunity that's as strong as live vaccines, so you may need several doses over time, i.e. those booster shots, in order to get ongoing immunity against diseases. Inactivated vaccines currently are used to protect us against hepatitis A, influenza, polio, and rabies. live attenuated vaccines use a weakened, i.e. attenuated, form of the virus or bacteria that causes the disease. Because these vaccines are so similar to the natural infection that they help prevent, they create a strong and long-lasting immune response. Just one or two doses of most live vaccines can give you a lifetime of protection. But live vaccines also can have some issues. Because they contain a small amount of the weakened live virus, some people should be sure and talk to their doctor before receiving them, as they may be at increased risk for adverse reactions, such as people with weakened immune systems, with long-term health problems, or people who've had an organ transplant. Live vaccines are used to protect us against measles, mumps, and rubella, which is the MMR combined vaccine, rotavirus, smallpox, chickenpox, and yellow fever. Messenger RNA vaccines, also called mRNA vaccines, have been known for decades, but for the first time, this technology was used to make some of the new COVID-19 vaccines. mRNA vaccines work by inserting messenger RNA from the pathogen into our own cells to cause our cells to make proteins that the virus makes during an infection in order to trigger an immune response. The mRNA is a relatively unstable compound and degrades in the body after it has done its job. It is not incorporated permanently into our own genome. The instability contributes to the need for supercooled storage and a short viability period. These vaccines also, right now, contain polyethylene glycol, which can cause a significant allergic reaction in some individuals. To date, this technology has only been used to create COVID-19 vaccines. Subunit, recombinant, polysaccharide, and conjugate vaccines use specific parts of the pathogen, like its protein, sugar, or capsid, which is a casing around the pathogen. Because these vaccines use only specific pieces of the virus, they elicit a very strong immune response that's targeted to key parts of the virus. They can also be used on almost everyone, including those with weakened immune systems and other chronic health problems. One limitation of these vaccines is that you may need booster shots to get ongoing protection against the diseases. These vaccines are used to protect against Haemophilus influenza type B disease, hepatitis B, human papillomavirus, whooping cough, pneumococcal disease, meningococcal disease, and shingles. Toxoid vaccines use a toxin, a harmful product, made by the bacteria that causes a disease. They create immunity to the parts of the pathogen that cause a disease instead of the bacteria itself. That means the immune response is targeted to the toxin instead of the whole pathogen. Like some other types of vaccines, you may need booster shots to get ongoing protection against these bacteria. Toxoid vaccines are used to protect against diphtheria and tetanus. Viral vector vaccine technology has been used for decades. Viral vector, meaning carrier, vaccines use a modified weakened version of a different virus than the targeted virus as a vector or carrier to penetrate our cells and deliver genetic material of the targeted virus to our own cells. This will induce our cells to make pathogenic materials from the targeted virus that our immune system can then perceive and create defenses to. Several different modified or weakened viruses have been used as vectors, including influenza, measles, and adenoviruses, which cause the common cold. Adenovirus is one of the viral vectors used in COVID-19 vaccines. For example, in the case of the COVID-19 vaccine, the vector adenovirus has been modified to carry DNA of COVID-19 into our cells, where that DNA induces production of COVID-19 materials, which trigger an immune response. Some vaccines recently used for Ebola outbreaks have also used viral vector technology, and there's ongoing research on viral vector vaccines for use against other infectious diseases such as Zika, flu, and HIV. The vaccines that deliver genetic code to create viral materials that trigger the immune system response, that is, viral vector vaccines and mRNA vaccines, mimic closely the behavior of actual viruses in our bodies. Viruses insert their genetic code, either DNA or RNA, into our cells through various methods, thus co-opting our own genetic production mechanics to create more virus rather than making our normal materials. This is what leads to a viral population explosion in our bodies, aka an infection, and thus stimulates the immune system to create antibodies in other cells to attack and subsume that virus and restore health. These vaccines have been engineered to essentially create the same phenomena, except to do it in a way that is much more controllable and mild, leading to development of an immune response to a particular virus without having to live through a potentially dangerous full-blown infection. Vaccines, however, are not always entirely benign. There are many other materials in the vaccine injection itself besides the actual pathogenic material, including potentially protective emollients, solvents, and preservatives, all of which could lead to an allergic reaction in a susceptible individual. Vaccines can sometimes cause an overreaction of the immune system itself and leave the immune system in a hyperreactive state, leading ultimately to other diseases and allergies. Vaccines can lead to outbreaks of otherwise dormant chronic infections in an individual, such as herpes simplex or shingles. Remember that a vaccine challenges the immune system. That's the whole idea. It engages the immune system in an acute response to a new stimulus, thereby potentially leading to decreased responses to other long-term infections or to new exposures that happen to occur around the same time of the vaccination, just through bad timing. This is why it's always important to talk with your doctor before getting any vaccine and to be aware of whatever other challenges your immune system may be facing as you schedule vaccines. Recall that stress and tension reduce immune function and so may contribute to an adverse vaccine reaction. Recall that the immune system is a system, note the emphasis on that word system, of three-dimensional organs and lymphatic circulation located throughout the whole body. Injuries or illnesses of many kinds may leave the immune system compromised. Maintaining vibrant health systemically throughout our whole body, mind, and spirit, remember that stress factor, is crucial to maintaining vibrant immune system health and therefore to ensuring a robust and appropriate response to those essential and life-saving vaccinations. Which brings me back to osteopathy and to the close of today's show here with a reminder that an osteopathic physician who is a specialist in osteopathic manual medicine can be very helpful for immune issues of all kinds. Working gently with our hands, with the involved organs, nerves, vasculature, fascias, capsules, and associated tissues to release restrictions in the physical tissues of the immune organs, the lymphatic system, the diaphragm, chest, and the blood flow, as well as to help balance the autonomic nervous system function based on anatomical detail, and to help with nutritional issues and support for whatever procedures or treatments you may be going through. Recall that all of the immune system is a complex physical entity with connections between all the parts that need to be open, flexible, and moving freely with excellent neural conduction from the nerves, optimal arterial and venous blood flow, and lymphatic drainage to remain healthy, vital, and functioning normally. Well, it's been quite an adventure exploring the human immune system through all of these shows together. Remember, you can revisit all of them at robinhoodradio.com or at goldmantrip.net. You can email your comments and suggestions also for topics to yourhealth@robinhoodradio.com. If you have a health issue yourself and would like to find out about how we might be able to help you in our practice of traditional osteopathy, we're at our offices in Sharon, Connecticut, Dr. Kim Tripp and Dr. Andrew Goldman, Goldman Tripp Osteopathic Healthcare, 860-364-5990, with evening hours Wednesdays and Fridays, or on the web at www.goldmantripp.net. I'll be looking forward to being with you next time. Till then, you take care of yourself, and thanks for listening.